Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. I woke up at 6 to be here. No, I'm joking, 5:30. First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me here. It's a pleasure to be here again after 6 years. And our chair was saying, I'm Rosa Valiante. I'm from the Observatory of Rome in Italy. And I'm going to talk about our project related to the formation and evolution of massive black holes and black hole binaries at early cosmic epochs. This work has been made and is ongoing, actually, thanks to the collaboration of a large number of people. For example, Monica and Alberto were here as well. As Alberto was saying on Monday, there is still an entire universe to explore with gravitational waves, especially at high redshift, and where is where I'm going to bring you in this talk. We expect that the next generation of gravitational wave observatories will give us access to sources up to redshift 20 and to a large mass interval thanks to binaries. This exploration will enable us to investigate how, when, and where the earliest black holes and binaries form, which is their mass, and if they are the seeds, the building blocks, of the most massive one, the supermassive black holes that we see at high redshift. Indeed, our starting point is the observation of a large number of supermassive black holes of the order of 10 to the 9 solar masses or above, up to very, very high redshift, up to redshift 7, when the universe was less than 1 giga-year old. Here I'm showing a small collection of black hole masses and redshift of observed supermassive black holes powering luminous quasars up to redshift 7 or more. Our approach is to model the evolution, the formation of these quasars through observations and models in order to trace the seed evolution and the black hole mass binaries formation along the hierarchical assembly of their high redshift host galaxies. Let me first have a brief, very quick overview of the main pathways to the first seed black holes. How do they form? The first channel is, as you know, the end product of population tree stars that may give rise to seed, what we call the light seeds, of up to 100 or more solar masses. Alternatively, a more massive formation scenario has been invoked, for example, to explain the formation of the supermassive black holes that we observe at redshift larger than 6, that are quite a challenge to be explained for models. This scenario relies on the formation of what we call the direct collapse black hole, that is an heavy seed of an average mass of 10 to the 5 that is expected to form in atomic cooling halos, which are pristine or metal poor, in which the star formation is somehow inhibited, suppressed, as for example, thanks to the presence of a strong radiation that photodissociates the H2 molecules that are the main coolant in this kind of system in absence of metals. And this suppression would enable a supermassive star, or a quasi-star as they call, to form, accreting quickly all the gas from its surroundings and eventually collapsing into a massive black hole. We call these the heavy seeds, in contrast with the lightest seed channel. There's a third channel that is we are starting to call this medium weight, as they are in the middle. And it relies on the formation of 10 to the 3 to 10 to the 4 solar mass intermediate mass seeds from runway collisions in dense nuclear star clusters at high redshift. These three channels can all coexist in the same hierarchical history. In my work, I've been focusing actually on the relative role of the lightest and the heaviest seeds in growing a supermassive black hole by redshift 6. Recently, we are working on implementing the third channel as well, but I'm not going to show the results of this study in this talk. So I will be focusing on these two seeds here. To our study, we have implemented a semi-analytical hierarchical model for the formation and evolution of quasars in the host galaxies from the epoch of the formation of the very first stars down to the redshift at which the quasar is actually observed. We constrain the model through all the observation available for these quasars and the host galaxies. I mean the black hole mass, the star formation rate, the dust mass as well, the metallicity, and so on and so forth. In this picture, the progenitor galaxy evolved, forming stars, forming black holes, and all the evolution of the galaxy and the central black holes is regulated by the complex interplay between the mechanical, chemical, and radiative feedback that we include in our treatment. Let me start from the formation of the very first stars. We assume that population tree stars form in pristine or metal poor gas when the metallicity is below that this critical threshold here, 10 to the minus 4 solar, and while population 2 stars, the second generation of stars, form out of more enriched gas. We adopt a Larson IMF with a characteristic mass of 20 solar masses for the population 3 stars in a massive mass range from 10 to 300 solar masses. That is triggered by the absence of metals, actually. And a more standard, let's say standard, Salpeter IMF for population 2 stars. However, in our approach, we do not just assume that the population 3 stars form. Following each star formation episode, we stochastically sample the initial mass function on the basis of this intrinsic distribution, randomly selecting the stars in this mass range until we reach the total stellar mass form that we have in the stellar burst. These three panels here are an example of the mass distribution that emerged from these stochastic procedures for three different total stellar mass formed. This panel is representative of what happened, for example, in the highest redshift and smallest dark matter halos, the first protogalaxies, in which the star formation efficiency driven by H2 cooling is relatively slow. And in this particular case, we are forming just 6 stars and no black hole progenitors that are indicated by the gray region here. But however, you can also expect stochastically to form, for example, a single 100 black hole mass. The other two panels show how the mass distribution is extended towards more massive stars as the total stellar mass formed in the burst increases. We have checked that the full IMF here is fully sampled by our stochastic procedure when the total mass formed exceeds 10 to the 6 solar masses. In this case, you have exactly this functional form here. With this prescription, we can trace the formation of the first light seeds emerging from the population 3 stars. And this is the distribution of our light seeds. They stochastically form in pristine or metal poor halos with masses from 10 to the 6 to 10 to the 8 solar masses that are both H2 or atomic cooling halos, still metal poor. And we are assuming that only the most massive black hole among a stellar population will be able to settle in the center of its host galaxy when it will start accreting gas from the surroundings. In this case, I'm showing the distribution of light seeds for two different quasars that I have taken as a target object from the observations. Here, the bluer one, the darker one, is a quasar hosting a supermassive black hole at redshift 6, while the other one is for a quasar at redshift 2. I have taken these two as a reference model, but we are going to move towards lower redshift, simulating, for example, a quasar at redshift 0.2. I will be able in a few months to have some results on that as well. These distributions reflect the birth environments of the light seeds. In particular, at redshift larger than 20 or 18 on average, the population tree stars and thus the light seeds mainly form in the mini halos, the smallest halos in our major histories, in which the star formation is strongly affected by the presence of H2 photodissociating radiation. On the other hand, at lower redshift, these form instead in atomic cooling halos, which are less vulnerable to radiative feedback. Here we stop forming population tree stars as soon as each galaxy in our merger histories have been enriched above the critical metallicity threshold that signs the transition between the population tree and population two stars. In the same cosmological evolution, we also form the heavy seed black holes. In this case, we are assuming a mass of 10 to the 5 for each seed, solar mass, but we are working on improving this prescription as well, including a birth mass function also for the seeds. And they form in metal-free sterile mini halos, atomic cooling halos, when they are exposed to a Lyman-Werner radiation photodissociating the H2 molecule above a given threshold, that is the minimal threshold required to trigger the direct collapse scenario. Here I'm showing the redshift distribution of the number of heavy seeds, and as you can see, for the two different quasars, and as you can see, it's quite different from the distribution of light seeds. This sudden appearance and decline of this channel is a consequence of the tight birth environmental conditions required to the heavy seed channel to form. These are met only by a relatively small number of halos and over a very limited period of time. In other words, they are rare when compared to the light seeds. The light seeds should be more common. Once the seeds are formed, we follow their accretion via via gas accretion and merges with other black holes. In this picture, I'm limiting the growth of the black holes to the Eddington limit, but we have also investigated an alternative scenario in which the light seeds can grow via super Eddington accretion. In this picture, we form black hole binaries through galaxy mergers when a major merger occurs. And in this first analysis, we are assuming that the two black holes merge right away as soon as their host galaxy coalesce. The black holes just follow the fate of their host galaxies, coalescing in more or less few mega years. With this approach, we then can trace the formation and mergers of the earliest binaries in the universe in a cosmological context. Here I show the rest frame mass of the binaries as a function of the formation epoch, that is, when the two host galaxies merge. The lighter green points are for the quasar at redshift 6, while the darker ones are for the quasar at redshift 2. And the triangles here show mergers including at least one heavy seed. This is the same plot as before, but compared with the sensitivity curves, the waterfall plots, by the Einstein telescope in red and for LISA in blue. And as you can see, the third generation of ground-based observatories have the potential to unveil the earliest black hole binaries, the earliest merging light seeds, up to redshift 20. Well, while LISA will be more sensitive to merges, including at least one heavy seed, but already at redshift 15. However, as you may have noticed, we have a large number of binaries, in particular in the light seeds regime. This is a consequence of the large merger rates of galaxies that is typically high redshift, but also a consequence of our assumption that the two black holes merge right away following their host galaxies. This is a main limitation of the code, but this is an optimistic view. So to overcome this limitation, we are improving our treatment of the black hole mergers in our model, and as a first step, we have implemented what we call the stalled black hole binary scenario, in which the two black holes form following the mergers of the host galaxies, but the binary does not merge until a third body comes. We have to wait for a third black hole or another binary to trigger the prompt merger of the binary. This is the same plot as before, but focused on the redshift 6 simulation. And as you can see, I don't know if you appreciate the difference, we have, if you look at the lighter green data here, we have a slightly lower number of binaries and shifted towards lower redshift. And the delay time distribution is shown here. We have an average delay of 50 mega years, more or less, stating the fact that we have to wait for an intruder to come to let the binary merge. We are actually going to improve even better this prescription, looking at the numerical simulations that are available in the literature that show the triple encounters. For example, that proposed by Bonetti and collaborators. And in that case, we will have a more physically motivated prescription for our black hole mergers probability and time scales. So stay tuned for more results on this. We have seen that gravitational waves will witness the dawn of the earliest black hole binaries. But what about the signatures of the earliest accreting light seeds? I'm not talking about the electromagnetic counterparts. There will be other speakers talking about that. I'm talking about the first signatures of accreting seeds. Here, I'm showing the evolving spectral energy distribution that we have modeled for an accreting heavy seed of mass of 10 to the 5 solar masses, forming a redshift about 16.5, growing in its host galaxy, becoming as massive as few times 10 to the 7 solar masses by redshift 10. Here, for comparison, I show the sensitivity limits of JWST in the near and mid-infrared, and the area-dependent flux limit from the ATINA survey designed by AIRD and collaborators, and the sensitivity limit of the mission concept links for a single source, of known position. And in this particular case, the AGN, the small accreting seed, is always more luminous than its host galaxy stellar component. So we have just the emission from the accreting seed. And as you can see, the JWST telescope and ATINA links, if in operation, will be way too good to detect these early accreting seeds already at very high redshift. We are talking about 15 or 17. For comparison, I'm doing the same exercise for a growing light seed, starting from a 100 or 1,000 solar mass black hole that is growing via Eddington accretion, constant Eddington accretion in its host galaxy. Here we are have 10, redshift 10 and redshift 5, and we are neglecting both the absorption due to intervening neutral hydrogen along the line of sight that may actually swept away all the flux in this region here, and also the contribution of the host galaxy in order to set the most favorable conditions for this light seed to be detected. However, as you see from the two plots, it would be really difficult, if not even possible, to reveal from electromagnetic signatures these kind of seeds. Not even LINX will be able to reach redshift 5. Maybe it will be redshift 3 or something like that. So this means that the Einstein telescope, with a network of 3G detectors, will be the only instrument that will enable us to discover the light seeds, the accreting light seeds, when they form in binaries and merge, of course. And this will be our only chance to see the end products of population 3 stars. This is my summary. I think I'm going to leave this here to have more time to discuss. Thank you very much.
I was just curious about what your thoughts are in terms of distinguishing these murders from seeds versus yeah. ones that may just be happening through whatever channels, in these galaxies. I don't know if those have a different delay time distribution. Maybe they would happen later, but...
I think they will hear something about merging electromagnetic signatures from other talks. I can say something about distinguishing AGN and galaxies, because that it's what I'm doing. I don't know if we will be able to distinguish if they are accreting black holes or merging black holes. I don't know.
And just following up the issue of the rates for 3G. So what did you have an estimate for the rates? And also,
No,
is
not
there
yet.
Any hope to measure rate evolution as well?
The measure rate evolution,
yeah.
I don't think I'm going to do that, because our is a semi-analytic model. If you want a rate, I think it's not the best tool to use. For example, I don't have any issue on the volume in which they will be located, for example. I'm not going to tell you lies. I mean, I don't want to show a rate that is not reliable.
just have a comment, follow-up comment on the first questions. I think, if I remember correctly from a white paper that was submitted by the LINX PI and collaboration, it's going to be very challenging to even assuming that we detect some candidates, be able to candidate heavy seeds at higher ashes to distinguish them from relatively lower mass objects that have already grown by redshift 6 or so.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, they made an argument that a discriminating test could come from the presence or lack of a detected
optical counterpart.
In the sense that the truly pristine massive seeds should form in, they have a ratio of black hole mass to stellar component of the host that is much higher, and therefore you would expect not to detect the host, not even with JWSTs.
See that actually.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Here we have the galaxy, the stellar galaxy component, but it's always way too low to be detected. This is an AGN in its host galaxy. But that's why we need the galaxy to be sterile to form such kind of seed. This can be an indication. That's true.
Hi, maybe you have said it in the talk, but maybe I missed it. Do you have like a mass function as a function of redshift for these simulation? So like, you take all the black hole form and mass function of them as particular redshift. Do you have that mass function?
As I was saying, for the rate, I'm not performing mass functions, as we are not simulating an average volume of the universe, but a specific region of the universe in which a single quasar form. So my mass function would be biased by the fact that I'm modeling a quasar. It's not an average volume of the universe, so.
So, great talk. In your opinion, what are the main uncertainties of these models? Where they come from?
the ab initio assumptions. I mean, we are assuming that the first stars, for example, form out of metapoor gas, but we have to take into account also the dust that would decrease the characteristic mass of the seeds. On the other hand, we have this heavy seed scenario in which you are assuming that the, for example, heating by the Lyman-Werner flux is going to trigger the formation of a supermassive star. However, the stellar growth itself may halt the growth and then preventing the formation of a heavy seed. So there are a lot of uncertainties, in particular in the, for the condition required to form the seeds. That's why we need, for example, the 3G or LISA or all the facilities that we can have in order to understand if they exist. If we will be able to see one, we will be able to constrain also the uncertainty of the models. At least I hope so. I mean, if I'm going to see a light seed of 100 solar mass, I probably can say that it comes from a population 3 star. I'm not sure, but I hope so.
It's primordial.
Unless it is primordial. Yeah. I don't know.
So as you showed, the redshift distribution of the gravitational wave signals depends very much on the delay between formation of a binary and merger.
Yes.
So can you tell us very briefly a little bit more about how you're treating it now in the code, what timescales you're using, and what you hope to do in the future?
This is the timescale I'm using now. This is just the time that I have to wait from the epoch at which the binary is formed down to the redshift at which the intruder arrives. And this sets our current timescales. That is this distribution here in here. We will implement a more physical prescription coming from numerical simulations in which they can tell us for each triplets what is the merger probability of the binary and the timescale for the merger. In that case, I expect that the timescales will be longer with respect to this one. Here I'm picking at 7.5 in log. I expect that we will pick at 8.5. In that case, we will have a lot of leftover binaries that are not going to merge.
And presumably there could be processes that do not involve a third black hole, right? Is that going to be included in the future implementation?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.